With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. There is an incredible facility right here in downtown Toronto that is helping on the front lines and is doing incredible innovative research. They are a facility that treats everybody with dignity, and they need your help. May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. If this matters to you, help CAMH. There's no better place for your resources. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand and donate now. Help CAMH treat addiction and build hope.
Police in India have set up concrete barriers and laid razor wire to stop protesting farmers from entering New Delhi. Tens of thousands of farmers have demonstrated for months, demanding the government withdraw new agriculture laws.
Modi, son, you thought that I would give the farmers a seed and destroy the 70% of humanity from the bottom of the pyramid.
It might be the biggest protest in human history. But to be totally honest, I only really found out about it after Rihanna tweeted about it. What are the farmers' protests about?
The farmers' protest that's happening in India right now is about 3 months old, give or take. It kind of started in November in Punjab as a sit-in. It eventually became a march to Delhi, which was incredibly violent. Trudeau would speak out at one point about it in December.
The situation is concerning, and we're all very worried about family and friends. I know that's the reality for many of you. Let me remind you, Canada will always be there to defend the right of peaceful protest.
And then it's been sitting outside Delhi for about 2 months, just waiting to kind of come to a deal with the government on these farmers' bills. Currently, the system is known as the mandi system, which is sold to a wholesaler who turns around and sells it to essentially buyers. But what comes with it, most importantly, is a minimum center price, or MSP, which ensures that farmers are getting a certain fixed amount for their goods that is predictable and sustainable, which allows them to plan for every year. So the government is going to get rid of the MSP, so they're going to do away with essentially this minimum pricing. And then they're also going to open up the space to corporates, so that corporates can then directly engage farmers and not through the mandi system or this wholesale system. Also that corporations can start, you know, snatching up land. And then also corporations can start stockpiling produce. And so the debate's not whether reform is necessary or not. It's just that this is the wrong reform and you guys didn't use a proper process. Repeal everything. We'll get back to the table.
There are lots of details to the reforms. For example, the government says they won't do away with minimum support prices for staple crops. But what the new laws all add up to, according to the farmers, is the elimination of protections from a voracious globalized marketplace where multinational corporations would suddenly have the power to set extremely low prices and potentially impoverish them or destroy their chances of survival. Many of the farmers are from India's breadbasket, Punjab province in the north. And as Punjabis and Sikhs, they are increasingly second-class citizens under Prime Minister Narendra Modi's Hindu supremacist government. Hundreds of thousands of people, farmers and their families, have assembled on tractors and on foot around Delhi at barricades erected on the city's borders, where for the past 2 months they have been locked in standoffs with the police and the military, punctuated by violent flare-ups. In November, a reported 250 million Indians held a general strike in solidarity with the farmers. As I said, this is huge, and it's been happening for a while. But while some people, like me, may have been unaware of it all before Rihanna and Greta Thunberg got involved, Canada's Punjabi diaspora has been following it closely. Almost 700,000 Canadians originate from Punjab. Most of them have family there. Some of them still own farms there. So yeah, they knew about this before pop stars were tweeting about it. And one place that some of them went to for information about the farmers' protest was Baz News. That's B-A-A-Z. A brand new Canadian micro news organization that is basically just a Twitter account and an email newsletter at this point. It was launched just a few weeks ago by the guy who you heard just a few moments ago, Jaskaran Singh Sandhu. You've heard Jaskaran on this show before. He is with the World Sikh Organization, and he works as an analyst for the public affairs agency, Crestview Strategy. But when he and his partners launched Baz, with the idea of creating a space for news and opinions for the Sikh and Punjabi diaspora, Jaskaran and his team suddenly became nodes in an information network that was swirling around a major world event. An event in which Canada, as you're going to hear, plays an outsized role. The notion of the radical Canadian Sikh infiltrating our media and our politics in order to exert foreign influence on India and foment division and even violence. Well, it seems that this stereotype is a common one, one that holds a lot of currency in Modi's India. In its second week of existence, Baz News discovered one Liberal Member of Parliament, Ramesh Sangha, spreading false claims through Punjabi language media that another Liberal MP, Navdeep Bains, is a Sikh separatist extremist. And that was why Navdeep Bains recently stepped down, goes the conspiracy theory. That is not something that MP Ramesh Sangha would say to English language media, and when Baz News reported it, well, that scoop led to Sangha being ousted from the Liberal caucus. Not bad for week two of a brand new publication. And that incident brought Baz to my attention via our colleague, Arshi Mann, and it brought Baz to the attention of the wider legacy media in Canada at just the right moment, right before Rihanna got everybody to notice the biggest protest in human history. Baz News Online is uniquely positioned to help Canada understand, from its point of view, what is happening in India and how it all impacts Canada and Canadians. And its co-founder, Jaskaran Singh Sandhu, joins me in a moment. Wait for it. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by Tara Sturgis, Dylan McTiernan, Kate Burrows, Mags Story, Jessica Katz, Andreas Krebs, and Eric.
Hi, I'm Eric, and I'm a forestry consultant from Edmonton, Alberta. I support Canada Land because I appreciate learning about the issues and topics presented by both the Commons and the Thunder Bay series, and how they've exposed me to some hard truths about Canadian society. I've also found that Canada Land's investigative journalism, like in the Cool Mule series, has been extremely entertaining. Lastly, through my own bizarre reasoning that I still do not fully understand, I believe that listening to Jesse Brown has somehow made me into a more open-minded and understanding person, and that is definitely worth paying for.
I was surprised to learn that in India's media, Canadians are scary. There's this frequent stereotype of the violent Canadian Khalistani. Feverish reports that these violent Sikh separatists have infiltrated the Trudeau government. What is the supposed threat that Indians are being told to worry about?
Yeah, Canadians are one of the most scariest people in the world, particularly Sikh Canadians in India.
Cooperation and coordination between Khalistanis and Pakistani diplomats has been going on. They further add that it is well known that the separatist and violent Khalistani elements carry out anti-India activities from the safety of the Canadian soil.
And there's a big backstory to this. You have to understand kind of like the psyche of the Indian state. And a lot of this is driven by the Indian government. It's not necessarily like people on the ground are scared of Canadians. I think people on the ground see Canadians much like anywhere else in the world. But the Indian government has done an excellent job of kind of demonizing and vilifying Canadians and Sikh Canadians in particular quite effectively over decades, actually. This is not just a recent phenomenon.
But what is the idea?
Yeah, so the Sikh community, in particular in the 80s and 90s, was at the forefront of what was known as the Khalistan movement or the Sikh sovereignty movement. And it was probably one of the biggest, I guess, militant movements, you can say, against the Indian state, a separatist movement. Now that movement, at least on the ground, has changed quite a bit. However, the Indian state likes to state that, or these conversations around Sikh sovereignty only exist because of interference from Sikhs in the diaspora, and then they like to point at Canada in particular. So Canadian Sikhs are kind of made out as a boogeyman of sorts.
I see. So it's this scary idea of foreign actors who are doing this from abroad. So it's got like propaganda value, as you describe it, for the Modi government. Is it like considered a practical problem? Because I'm delving into this, and you know, you're affiliated with the World Sikh Organization, who just released a report, but it's well documented through Canada's media, and I was surprised. I didn't know about all this stuff. Like the Indian equivalent of the CIA, the Research and Intelligence Wing, had agents in Canada in the 80s who were spying on Canadians here and were thrown out, these raw agents. They paid thousands of dollars to Indian newspapers in Canada to influence editorial content. Our own team member, Arshi Mann, wrote a piece in the Globe years ago about how the Indian consulate was trying to interfere with a cultural festival in Brampton. Global News had a report last year about how Canadian politicians were the subject of Indian espionage operations. There's like active intelligence work being done here, which suggests to me that there are Canadians trying to influence a militant movement in India from Canada.
Yeah, it's tough to say whether they think this is real or not. My take on this, and I think a take from many Sikh Canadians, is that Sikhs are used as a scapegoat to mask what are actually serious internal issues in India. What they first do is say, no, this is not an issue, this dissent, these problems, these grievances are actually not real grievances in India, and they're a product of Sikhs in the diaspora. And then they take one more step after that, and it's, well, even the Sikhs in diaspora, the ones that are causing noise are actually funded by Pakistan, and nowadays they also throw China in as well. And of the only two states in India that don't have a Hindu majority population, Punjab is one of them, which is Sikh, and Kashmir is the other, which is Muslim. So India kind of sees this as a perpetually existing kind of threat to their state, to have these groups that don't easily fold into what is like this one Hindu state type identity that the Modi government in particular is trying to push. But the Congress government has their own history with the Sikh community. And it was actually the Congress government that attacked what is the Darbar Sahib or the Golden Temple and committed what we consider the Sikh genocide. And much like, you know, Iran, much like China, you know, much like other nations around the world that interfere within diaspora communities abroad, India is no different. And I think the mistake that people make is they assume India being a democracy, they'll never do things like this. But it's the furthest thing from the truth, especially under the Modi government, who is pushing what is known as a Hindu Rashtra or Hinduatva, which is this a Hindu state, a Hindu nationalism. Which essentially has to erase the other to be viable.
It's a supremacist movement. It's commonly understood this is a Hindu supremacist government.
Yeah, it is a supremacist movement. And the BJP is part of what is known as the Sangh Parivar, right? Or the Sangh family. And the Sangh Parivar is made up of multiple components. So the BJP would be what you consider the political arm, right? Like your mainstream political party. The actual anchor of the Sangh Parivar, though, is the RSS. And the RSS is like the spiritual center of the Sangh Parivar. It's the thought leadership of the Sangh Parivar. And it also operates and controls like the militant arm of the Sangh Parivar. The RSS, by the way, has been banned in India multiple times as a terrorist organization. So Modi actually started off as a member of the RSS. And if you look at the history of the RSS and its founder, they're actually inspired, and I'm not making this up. This is not like one of those things where I say this as a hyperbole of some sort. They are literally inspired by Nazis. They look at the handbook of the Nazis and say, that's something we can do here in India. And it's masked by this, again, this catchphrase that the Indian government likes using of the world's largest democracy. But the reality is, the Modi government in particular is a Hindu supremacist group that is hell-bent on essentially creating, again, what is known as a Hindu Rashtra or the Hindu state.
Well, if the conspiracy theories are true and the Sikh diaspora in Canada is so incredibly influential, it's quite amazing what our Canadian Sikhs have done, because the biggest protest perhaps in human history is taking place right now. I guess that's all motivated by Khalistani Canadians is the concept. Maybe you can talk a little bit about how your news organization, you've got this micro news site that you just launched, Boz. It's very new. Why did you launch Boz? What's the origin of this news site?
So much like everything I do, the origin of this is Terry Molesky. And I hate saying it because it's kind of sad, because like every single part of my origin story starts with a man, and it is sad in a way. You know, he did what was very defamatory, a documentary called Samosa Politics. Like, the title itself is racist beyond like just his content. But I was a young guy when I watched that. I was probably 20 at the time, if I remember correctly. And I felt powerless. And for a lot of folks, you know, we're a product of that type of coverage growing up here. You know, my parents immigrated here. I was the first generation to be born and raised in Canada. And, you know, I saw this type of commentary and it was like, you know, what can we do to solve this? You know, for 15 years, really spent a lot of time in the advocacy space, got to know a lot of different people across the world in the Sikh diaspora. You know, it's a tight community. And, you know, it got to a point here, especially with the farmers' protest, I think acted as a real catalyst. You know, we had this moment where the diaspora was together in a way that was unprecedented. And it just felt right. Like, this is a time to launch it. People want to start talking in more long form. That was the genesis of all this. And we just wanted a home for opinions and ideas from the community, talking about issues that not only, you know, impact the Sikh community in a kind of a niche way, but also talk about global issues from a Sikh lens or from a Punjabi community lens. You know, whether that's Brexit, whether that's U.S. elections, whether it's Justin Trudeau on vaccines, like whatever it is. And I think like mainstream media doesn't necessarily speak for us, right? If we want or even write op-eds and stuff, they more often than not will reject what you send them. And if we had our own platform where we can kind of do this more freely without the gatekeeping, that could be powerful.
How is it covering the farmers' protest? And, you know, I think if it's not clear already to our listeners, you have a pretty distinct political perspective and you come at this from a world of political advocacy into journalism. So what is Boz's perspective on the farmers' protest?
Yeah, no, I think you make an important point. Like, my roots are activists, right? It's advocacy space and it's speaking for and fighting for Sikh Canadians who are often maligned to serve, you know, domestic purposes back in India. Part of that process has been, you know, tough over the years, where our community is attacked over and over again, is incredibly misunderstood as a visible minority group, both like as a people, as brown people with turbans and beards, or as brown women who also carry wear turbans as well, or and often carry kirpans or other articles of the faith. That's very easy to identify us as a people. And then secondly, a religious minority. And I think one of the issues that we are trying to solve with Boz is, how do we start telling our own story effectively and start shaping our own narratives? And it's not necessarily something that, you know, we're trying to turn around and then persuade mainstream with. It's also like an internal facing body, right? It's also an internal facing media organization where we're speaking amongst ourselves, but it's accessible to mainstream if they want to hop in and look at it. When we look at the farmers' protest, I think you bring up a good point. You know, the Indian government tries to present it as some nefarious movement of either A, farmers who just misunderstand the bill of the laws or undereducated, or B, which is actually a very common trope within Indian media, is a result of, again, like Khalistanis that live abroad. It's a result of Pakistan-China funding. It's actually imported from abroad. And it's like this ongoing trick that the Indian media tries to use at the hands of the Indian state. And it's really dangerous. Right? It really does dehumanize these people. And it often is used as a precursor and an excuse to then unleash violence to break it up. And our goal at Boz, at least, is to kind of share that story effectively for folks here to equip folks here with actually what's happening on the ground. And we have, you know, freelance journalists at the protest site. And then also internally, just talk about it and share that story internally in a way that's accessible for folks that are second, third generation here.
News sites and organizations, they're going to be launched out of frustration with the CBC. to remind people, and this is what you and I have spoken about before, you know, Terry Maleski did this thing, this report years ago called Samosa Politics, about the supposed violent affiliations of Canadian Sikhs and Canadian Sikhs in government. And it seems like your political consciousness began there in this much maligned report. Maleski is back in the picture of this story. I don't think that he was being funded by a foreign government back when he did that report for CBC. I think he just really had his mustache and a bristle about this and was sure he was right and remained that way for many, many years. But then came this this very strange, I think just to anybody reading it, this report from the MacDonald Laurier Institute that was written like a think tank's report. But if you read Terry Maleski in it, it reads like just like kind of a very opinionated op-ed, like, just somebody with an argument. What Press Progress has revealed is that there are connections here. The MacDonald Laurier Institute have links to this a consulting firm, the one that's run by Stephen Harper, which has been retained to promote trade with India. So, I mean, this really is quite the rabbit hole to fall into. I had no idea all of this was happening in Canada. Let's be honest with each other. You started Boz as a Substack. It's like a newsletter. You know, I don't think you didn't open up affiliate offices across the country. This is how a lot of things started, and I'm no exception. It starts off as a hobby, as a place to put your opinion. But then once you kind of hang your shingle that you're looking at things through a Sikh and Punjabi lens, stories come to you, and you happen to catch this in translation, a scoop that ended up removing an MP from caucus.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Ramesh Sangha, former member of parliament with the Liberal Party of Canada, said something stupid, and we did some breaking news as well. But like, this started off as what was supposed to be just like a cathartic exercise of putting our thoughts in paper and stop like shouting into a void. I get sent stuff all the time now, and it's only been 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, it's only been 3 weeks. I don't understand how I'm going to like juggle all this stuff and when to release what. And it's been a bit of a crash course, to be honest with you.
What size audience are you playing to? Is it just the Canadian, the diaspora in Canada, or are you getting global clicks? What's going on?
It's global. It's the whole global diaspora. Canada is probably most of the audience, but I use the word most loosely. It's not too far ahead from audiences in the UK and the US. And there's a growing audience from India, actually, especially on our coverage regarding the farmers protest. And now we've somehow become one of the few independent outlets that are driving conversation in Indian media and writing stories that Indian media doesn't cover. And, you know, the conversation of free press in India and mainstream national media there is a long one and, very compromised and under a lot of pressure. And so Boz is starting to fill a void there as well. But the Ramesh Sangha story was, it came about this way as well. Like, someone messaged me with a clip of this interview. And now, you know, people may think I sit there and watch ethnic multicultural media, but that's not true. I don't. But this was really someone shooting me a clip of a YouTube link of a show where Ramesh went on and spoke very openly and frankly about why he thought Minister Baines had stepped down. And he essentially repeats the talking points that were driven through Indian media through a channel called Z News. Z News is one of many outlets that are referred to as Godi Media. Godi means lap. So it's called lap media. They're lap dogs for the government. Uh-huh. And they usually are used as a channel to push state propaganda.
I saw this clip in the Press Progress piece of Terry Maleski giving an interview to a show actually called Blitzkrieg.
Yes.
Is that part of this lapdog, supposed lapdog dog media?
So Blitzkrieg and some of these other shows that Terry went on are like the, what's the one removed crazy outlet that's not Fox News in America? Like, it would be like the rebel media here. But I guess even worse, the rebel media, because like Republic TV, which is one of the major channels that Terry Maleski has gone on, in full-out cahoots with the Modi government. India's ranked 142 in the Press Freedom Index out of 180 countries, nicely nestled between Palestine and Russia. And Ramesh Sangha was parroting lines that a lot of these, you know, quote-unquote, Godi media outlets were using to demonize Navdeep Bains, but not so much because, you know, Navdeep's important to them. It's they're using him as a proxy to take shots at the Sikh diaspora. And Ramesh would, you know, often go on Punjabi ethnic media and talk about like his thoughts on these things that were direct contrary to Trudeau or his colleagues' points on this matter. At that point, you know, enough's enough. There's this whole universe in this world that I think like mainstream Canadian media and society just misses. Like they don't even know exist. It's like this whole parallel universe in which like folks like me and my community, but that's, it's not unique to the Punjabi community live in, where these stories are just never told or not, quite frankly, just not understood. And like the context and the nuance is not understood. So we took it, we translated it, we clipped out the relevant part. We made a story of it. And then the NDP got a hold of it, or one of their MPs quote tweeted it. And then at that point, it was too much. Like the Liberal Party was going to kick out this guy eventually. And when they did, that was, I guess, our big break into legitimate reporting.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp, therapy online that has served over 3 million people around the world, and it's available here in Canada. And this time of year, we're all emerging from our winter-like seclusion and, you know, patio season and socializing, and it can be terrifically fun, but it can also create a lot of pressure. And some people get, like, anxiety, social anxiety from being out too much. What did Iggy Pop say about social life? It's torture dressed as fun. It doesn't need to be torture. I think it's just about finding, like, the right balance of how much of other people do you want? I mean, we need each other, but I think that at a certain point, it can become overwhelming. And talking to somebody about yourself, about your social life, about your relationships is a way of gaining insight into what is right for you. It's not selfish to examine that with a professional. And as the largest online therapy provider in the world, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Listeners of the show get 10% off of their first month at betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. That's better, H-E-L-P, betterhelp.com/CanadaLand. This episode of Canada Land is brought to you by the Center for Addiction and Mental Health, CAMH. We got a tour of their facilities in their downtown Toronto campus, and I was blown away by the heroic work that these people are doing. They are saving lives every day. I know people whose lives were saved, and they just really care about the dignity of the people who turn to them for help. Look, we talk a lot about these issues on Canada Land. We talk about the crisis that is claiming 20 lives every day in Canada to drug overdoses, but we don't give you a lot of options of what you can do about it. CAMH is an option. CAMH desperately needs resources that they directly put into their work, saving lives and turning people's lives around. Listen, May 6th to 12th is Mental Health Week. This is when they need your help the most. Go to camh.ca/CanadaLand to help CAMH treat addiction and build hope. How does Rihanna fit into all this?
Yeah, the queen. She's our queen. Rihanna killed it. So there's been a stalemate of sorts for the last, you know, give or take 60 days, where there's been about 10 or so meetings between farmer unions and government, and they're coming to nothing. There was a really rough week where the othering of sorts escalated in India media. The BJP use a tried and true tactic of Indian politics, which is hired goons. Again, I'm not making this up. This sounds all crazy and bizarre, I think, for a lot of people, but this is actually well known and accepted in Indian society. Hired goons to attack the protest sites. You know, everything they had in the books to do this. They've essentially built a wall around the protest site and shut off water and food. They blocked toilet access. Like, things are getting pretty dire in the last week. In comes Rihanna. Rihanna puts a 6-word tweet out, like, why aren't we talking about this more? And it's really touched a nerve in India. It's been the trending news for 2 days, and it put a lot of wind in the sails for the farmers' protest, because all of a sudden they have widespread international attention from people that are cool. They're getting more and more like A-list celebrities of sorts, and major institutions like Human Rights Watch doubling down and escalating advocacy in support of the farmers. And this has crippled the Indian state. They're absolutely devastated by this. Because if there's one thing about the Indian state that everyone needs to appreciate, is that they're incredibly insecure about themselves. They're incredibly bothered by any sort of critique of the Indian state. Not the Indian people, the Indian state.
Well, has there been a formal response to Rihanna?
Yeah, there has been a formal response. I don't know what country feels it necessary to respond to a singer, right? Like, it feels it to respond to like a private citizen of another country. But the Ministry of External Affairs, essentially the Foreign Affairs Department of India, put out a statement in response to Rihanna.
I thought you were going to say mixtape, but go ahead.
No. That would be actually more interesting and I think more appropriate. What they did is they put out a written statement essentially saying vested interests from around the world are essentially paying and needling folks like Rihanna to malign India, and that we should all stand against propaganda that is being leveled against this country.
Yeah, more foreign actors, more accusations of paid foreign actors.
Again, I kid you not, Rihanna's been accused of being a Khalistani supporter, and the evidence that media is using is that Rihanna follows Jagmeet on social media. Rihanna has been accused of being paid by Pakistan and China to do this.
I read through Boz that Bollywood is aligned with Modi. I mean, I don't know much about Bollywood. I know that Hollywood, whether it's true or not, considers itself sort of a critic of power, of political power when necessary. But it's not the case in India.
No, so the Indian film culture is very different than I think what we're used to in America. And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think the criticism against of Hollywood is that it's almost always aligned with, you know, left-leaning causes or the Democrats. In India, it's the opposite. So Bollywood is often actually used as a tool of the governing power of the day. So this is not necessarily just a BJP thing. Even in the past, the Bollywood has often been close to government or whoever is in power at the time. So during this whole movement, Bollywood has never come out and support or critique government actions. Even when the violent state crackdowns were happening, journalists were getting picked up and arrested for covering stories on the farmers' protest. Twitter accounts have been suspended everywhere. And not a single Bollywood actor said anything, quite frankly. The only celebrities that have come out in numbers and in strength have been those from Punjab, like the Punjab singers and Punjabi actors have come out in full force for the protest movement, but no one else really. And that's irked a lot of people, right? Because Bollywood has a lot of power in India. You know, they're larger than life, even more so than I think how we treat our celebrity culture here in the West. The other angle here is that Bollywood loves doing movies on Six.
Why?
I guess it's like an interesting character trope of like the Sikh is, you know, in any kind of military movie, you'll have like six central characters, for example, because, you know, Sikhs make up a huge, large component of the Indian army and are at least have the reputation and known for bravery in the battlefield. So let's say if you're doing any kind of movie around the army or military, you're usually going to have a Sikh character. So Bollywood loves to play these characters. But all of a sudden, they're quiet when these same six are trying to fight for their rights.
And the Bollywood representations of six are not played by six, are there famous actors, or are they played by?
Yeah, there are Sikh actors, but most Sikh roles are played by non-Sikhs. So there's one actor in particular named Akshay Kumar. If you have an Akshay Kumar movie, it's going to be a hit no matter what you do. Kind of like a Brad Pitt movie or something. And Akshay Kumar loves playing Sikh characters, and he's done it multiple times. In his most recent movie, what was called Kesari, which is like a historical reenactment of like a famous battle, he plays a Sikh character, but he dons like a fake beard. And, you know, people criticize him like, you know, you're appropriating the image, like at least grow the damn beard in. Like, why are you using a fake beard and like undermining the Sikh identity by doing this nonsense? Hire a Sikh. And if you're not going to hire a Sikh, you know, at least engage in method acting and grow in the beard. You know, like, this is really lazy. So, you know, there's a lot of this needling happening, like, from some circles. But all in all, like, everyone loves Akshay Kumar. And he's silent through this whole thing. And Akshay Kumar has a reputation of being a fanboy of sort of Modi and really standing up for the BJP government over and over again. But he's completely silent on this. This is a long story, but, like, this is connected to this Ministry of External Affairs statement that's put out against Rihanna. The only time Bollywood speakers speak up is a result of Rihanna. And it's not saying, hey, you know what, Rihanna has a point, let's talk about this. It's quote tweeting the Ministry of External Affairs tweet and saying, this is an internal issue and we must stand against all external propaganda trying to undermine the Indian state. And now all the Bollywood actors have come out either quote tweeting the MEA, the Ministry of External Affairs, or using the MEA's sponsored hashtag, which was Indians Against Propaganda. It's literally Donald Trump puts out a statement that the elections are rigged, and Brad Pitt quote tweets Donald Trump and say, guys, we can't allow our elections to be rigged. Like, that's literally the comparison.
But except that's not a comparison, because Trump never had the fealty. You know, he had a bunch of weirdos from a strange corner of the internet, but he didn't have, like, mainstream Hollywood actors supporting him outside of, you know, James Woods.
Yeah. Well, and this is where you kind of break down a kind of unique juxtaposition between Trump and Modi, because there's a lot of similarities and comparisons are made between the two over Trump's term, including, like, their tight relationship with one another. Yes, you know, Trump was in bed with the white supremacist movement. Modi actually helped build the Hindu supremacist movement in India. But, like, the similarities kind of go away at that point. And not because Modi is better than Trump, it's because he's worse. He's stacked the courts in a way that Trump would only dream of. Mainstream media is entirely compromised. The Economist had a report out that this is probably the worst state of India's democracy ever, even when you compare it to Indira Gandhi's emergency, where she literally suspended democracy. And so, unlike Trump, though, Modi actually also has the support of popular outfits within India, like your actors, your cultural centers, your institutions that would normally hold truth to power, are actually in bed with the government there. And really, the enemies are, at the end of the day, minority groups. And so all this is kind of directed at minority groups, again, as part of this larger effort to build what is known as, again, Hindu Rashtra, like the Hindu state.
All right, well, let's end our conversation where we began it, in Canada. I'm learning things from this that I didn't know, and one of which is that the large Sikh diaspora in Canada has its roots in agriculture in India. What is the take from the Sikh community in Canada on the farmers' protests?
There's two things that are true right now of those in Canada watching the farmers' protest, and one is inspiration. We're legitimately inspired by our brothers and sisters back home that are fighting. And quite frankly, almost everyone in the diaspora still has immediate family back home. And many of them still have land, like they still have farmland back home in Punjab. So this is very personal. And they're inspired, right? Because this is effectively the first real challenge to the Modi government over their now two terms in power. It's monumental. Like, no one has seen anything like this. This is totally bonkers, even, like, by India standards. And this has really been kind of the only major uprising and protest that hasn't been successfully cracked down immediately. The skeying and the living power of this movement has been amazing. And that's why you see a lot of parallel demonstrations happening across Canada from folks in the diaspora, because they're inspired. But, like, and there's also another reason why they're happening, and that's fear. And the Indian state has never been shy to use violence to crack down on dissent and to crack down on popular movements. This is true of obviously the Modi government, but it's also true of the Congress government. It's just the MO of sorts of how the state operates in India, especially when it comes to movements that are driven by minorities. And albeit this is a farmers movement and it has a lot of support from across India, the face has been Sikhs and Punjabis. There's a lot of fear that the protesters that are sitting outside Delhi are going to be facing the brunt of a violent state crackdown. And we've seen, and part of the reason why folks out here in Canada and elsewhere are demonstrating is and trying to get international scrutiny is to kind of protect their loved ones at home, to ensure that they're not facing further abuse and that they survive this thing and they're victorious.
And with your three-week-old Twitter account and Substack newsletter, I'm impressed. I appreciate that you've been hiring freelancers on the ground, but how are you going to cover this major world event? How are you going to follow this?
We're going to try our best to share stories from the ground that are important to folks in the diaspora who are desperate for information. And there is a lot of suspicion around major media outlets and houses in India. And the information is always taken with a huge grain of salt. And my goal is with Boz twofold. Like, one is with independent journalists on the ground, we're able to tell real stories from farmers and get their real reaction to things that are happening and present that to folks in the diaspora in a way that they can understand it and feel that it is accessible. And then secondly, for the community here in the diaspora itself, going back to an earlier point I made, you know, writing is cathartic, right? I want to give the opportunity for really smart people to share their thoughts and share their feelings. Because I think a common sentiment that is shared with me when I personally write or when we publish something on Boz is, man, you know, this is awesome. This is exactly what I felt, but I didn't know how to articulate. Or I knew this existed. Or I knew this tidbit was out there, but I could never find it or put my finger on it. And now it exists in a place that I can always reference. And I can always drop a link when I'm asked questions of, hey, what's going on? Like, why are you guys demonstrating here? And my hope is through Boz that we're able to provide a voice for a community that was so desperately seeking one. I guess, you know, working from home, saving time on commutes has allowed this to happen.
Okay. I did not have Indian farmers' rights on my 2021 global news event bingo card.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to learn new things.
Hey, I'm happy to share. Happy to share.
That is your Canada Land. Listen if you got anything out of today's episode, if you learned something or heard about something in a new way, if you value what you just heard and spent some of your time on, I think it only makes sense for you to spend a bit of money to help us make these shows. And I want to give you ad-free podcasts and socks and all kinds of other good stuff for doing that. There's no good reason not to. Click on the link in the show notes or go to canadaland.com/join. It takes just moments to help us make the show every week. Please do it. Email me at jesse@canadaland.com. I read everything that you send. We are on Twitter at CanadaLand. Our website is at canadaland.com. And if you go to canadaland.com/jobs, you'll see that we're hiring. Come help us make this show. Speaking of which, today's episode is produced by Kasia Mihailovich, who leaves us this week. Thank you for everything, Kasia, and good luck to you. Our managing editor is Andrea Schmidt. Our theme music is by So-Called. Syndication is handled by CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria. Visit them online at cfuv.ca. If you like Canada Land, please support it.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.